You're listening to What the Hell is Michael Jammin Talking About? Conversations in writing, art, and creativity. Today's episode is brought to you by my debut collection of true stories, A Paper Orchestra, available in print, ebook, and audiobook. To purchase and to support me and this podcast, please visit michaeljammin.com/book. And now, on with the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. I have a very special guest today, the very beautiful and talented, I'm going to call her Cynthia Mann, although she's now currently Cynthia Mann Jammin. She's my wife. And Cynthia, I met years ago. I was a writer on a show called Just Shoot Me, and she was the guest star, and she was a working actor, and she worked on many shows, including she was recurring on Friends. She did, I don't know, five or so or six episodes on Friends, recurring on Veronica's Closet, Seinfeld, ER, Suddenly Susan, Will and Grace, all those shows of the 90s, all those must-see TV shows. She did like almost all of them. And now she is the director and producer of my one-man show as well as the audiobook. So I thought we would, a paper orchestra. So she did all of that. So I thought we would talk to her about that and about her experience working in Hollywood, as well as directing and producing my audiobook for all of you people who aspire to do something similar. Hello, Cynthia.
Hi, Michael.
Hello, my beautiful wife. She's in the other room. We're pretending we live far apart, but actually we live very close to each other.
You could say we're roommates.
This is my roommate, Cynthia. So thank you so much for doing this. Thank you most of all for producing and directing my show. And I don't know, where do we begin? What should we start with?
Well, I think it's the thing that's interesting is people might want to know, like, how is it working together and why do we work together?
All right.
You know?
I don't have an answer for that because you're cheap labor. That's why we work.
Exactly.
I don't have to pay you. That's why. Is that why we work together?
Well, you know, it's funny because it goes all the way back to when we were first dating, I think. Mm-hmm. You know,
why?
You want to talk about that because.
Go ahead.
Well, we love doing projects together. Projects.
We call them projects because that's how the Canadians say it. Project.
Yeah, projects. And when we first met, it was kind of like, well, what, you know, we had this common interest of like, he's a writer, I'm an actor, but it's like, you can't sit around all day and just write and act, you know? So we would find common things that we like to take walks. We like to do hiking. I taught you about Runyon Canyon. Mm-hmm. You were running in the flats. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you running in the flats? Why don't you run up a hill?
I didn't realize you could. Because it was so steep. And then you said you ran it. So I said, oh, all right, I guess I could try running it.
I totally ran it. I ran it all the time. I had really muscular legs.
And you did. I know you did.
And I still do. Mm-hmm. You were kind of, so we would find little things to do. And I would, take you around LA and get you LA-ified.
Mm-hmm.
And teach you what celestial seasonings and time tea is.
And also Whole Foods and Mrs. Gooch's.
This is way back.
We would go to all this. She didn't approve of the supermarkets that I went to. So you didn't.
You can go in there. I'm not going to get my food there. You can get yours there, though.
So many ways you helped me a lot with art because you are an artist. You were a starving artist when I met you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, barely getting by, I would say.
Yeah.
I would say barely getting by. I've had every survival job you can think of. I've done singing telegrams with the monkey that goes like this.
Yeah.
And I've sold shoes, and I've waitressed, and I've done like a million survival jobs. So in my 30s, I finally started to get acting jobs. Like it took, and I was a professional dancer for a while, and didn't go to college right away. Only finished 2 years of it later in my 30s. When I met Michael, I was going to college and working and going on auditions and all of that. And when I met Michael, it was one of those crazy auditions where the casting director, Deb Borelski, who I'm forever grateful for, she brought me in just to the callback. She didn't even read me first because we had had a relationship and she always appreciated my work and mm-hmm. thought, oh, this is good for Cynthia. Let me just bring her in straight to the producers. And I remember Steve Levitan was there, probably Andy Gordon and Eileen, because mm-hmm. it was their episode.
Yep.
And Eileen Kahn. And I got that job. She called me like the next day and just said, yeah, you know, you got it. And I was like, oh, yay, I'm so excited. And they only booked me for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went on the set, it was at Universal because I didn't really know what Just Shoot Me was. It was a new show. And I don't think it was airing yet. It was just the first six episodes.
Yeah.
So nobody really knew what it was about or the tone or anything. And I just went in, did my scene, went home, prepared to come back the next day for shoot day, really. And you guys sent me a script at like 9 a.m. or something like that and said, we rewrote your scene because we found a better way to write this scene. I don't know. You can tell me the behind the scenes of that because I don't really know why you did that.
I don't really remember why that was rewritten. It was a long time ago.
I think it was maybe it just wasn't exciting enough or something, and you wanted the dialogue to be between me and Laura more.
I don't remember.
Instead of the roommate. And so you guys had me into the writer's room before, which is very unusual. Like, you never really go into a writer's room to work out a scene. But because we were shooting it that day, and we had to go straight to the run through. And I think the network was going to be there. Mm-hmm. You didn't want to mess around.
Yeah.
And so you gave me notes and we rehearsed it. And Laura was there. And the other scene partner, who I'm so sorry, I forgot his name. Chris,
yeah. I want to say.
Yeah, Chris. And then we just went and shot it. And then I shoot the scene at night. And I'm like, oh, my God, this was so much fun. And it was great. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to go. And who's standing right next to me as I'm walking off the set and kind of hanging back? And it was you.
It was me.
It was you.
And then you said you wanted to marry me. I said, but I don't even know you.
I complimented your tie.
That's right.
And then you said I did a really nice job. And
yeah,
I
you
said,
did.
Thank you. And then we were talking about, I think you said, so what do you like to do for fun or something like that?
Yeah, we went.
And I asked you that and you said you swing dance.
Yeah.
And I had already been swing dancing at the Derby many, many times with my friend Brendan. Yep. And we would go and swing dance. So
we took that,
my knees went weak when you.
That's right. I took.
Yeah.
It was either you or Brendan. I took you.
So then, you know, long story short, there was a couple of weeks that went by and you called me and said, you know, hi, this is Michael Jammin. And I said, I don't remember that name, but you're making it up because he has that name. And then you said, no, it's me. And I would like to take you out for coffee. And I said, I don't drink coffee. I drink tea.
Yeah, we had tea
instead.
That's
okay. Huh?
Yeah, right.
And then I remember this, Michael, on our first date, I hung back in my car because I think I saw you walk in. I'm like, I got to be a little late. I can't, I got to make him wait for me a little bit. So I made you wait just a little bit. And then I go in and the woman comes and says, so do you want like a chocolate chip or oatmeal cookie? Highland Grounds.
Right.
And it's not there anymore, I don't think. And you took the longest time figuring out what flavor you wanted. For me, it was easy. It was chocolate chip. It was like, or peanut butter. That was the other one.
Yeah.
And then you go, I go, why did it take you so long to order the cookie? And you go, because I wasn't sure if there was anything to be gained by lying.
Yeah, I was trying to impress you with the choice of cookies.
Weirdest thing anyone said to me.
Yeah.
That you cared enough about the cookie choice.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, and so, then we've been together ever since.
We've been together ever since. And to go back to the projects, we started with tiling a table that now our daughter has at her college apartment. Mm-hmm. And that was our first project. And then we decided to have kids. And that was our second project.
Yeah.
And then I started my business, Twirly Girl, which I ran for 15 years. Still going, but not as big. Mm-hmm. And you helped me with that. You wrote all my commercials and did all of that. And then you wrote a book. And then I'm helping you with that. So yeah. I think it's like, I think we're better when we're working together.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's bad. Like when I was doing Twirly Girl and you were doing going, you know, working as a writer and all of that, we never really connected on any kind of common ground aside from the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were always in doing your thing, I was doing my thing. But then when you started to write the commercials, I think our relationship went to another level, because mm-hmm. it's like you're appreciating the other person for their gifts and what they bring to you. But it's also like you're helping me with something that really means a lot to me.
Yeah.
And it was like this back and forth that just felt so great. And I trusted you more than anyone, right, to put me in the best light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the same with you trusting me with your words, because you know I care about them and I want to present you in the best light. And I'll work tirelessly to get
and
it
you,
right.
And you have, because you produced the audiobook and you had to learn how to do all that.
Yeah.
What do you have to tell people? What do you have to share? What wisdom can you share with people on starting something like this?
I would say, and I was talking to Lola about this last night, and what occurred to me was that when you have the pinch or you have the idea, just the idea to do something, and it's filling you with a lot of joy and passion, and it almost creates like its own engine in you, and you just feel so motivated to attack it and see if you can accomplish it. It almost doesn't matter if anybody else likes it, because it's something you need to do. And I felt that way with my business. I remember creating these dresses and going, I know they're special. I know they are so special. And I don't even, the icing on the cake is that other people love them, but that's not why I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm doing it because I need to do it, and it's bringing me so much joy, and it's fulfilling something in me that was missing or that I didn't even know that I needed. And it brought me so much that I could have, more than I could have ever like thought, oh, I'm going to make dresses because it's going to give me a sense of self. It's going to fire that entrepreneurial spirit. It's going to make me feel connected to those around me. I'm going to share my story about it. Like, I couldn't have thought that.
Mm-hmm.
I just followed the desire to make something. And then all these things kind of cascaded. And that's what I'm telling you. Like, that's how I feel about the audiobook. Like, when you said, all right, you're going to direct and you're also going to edit it and you're going to do all these things, I'm like, I don't know how to do pretty much. I knew how to direct because of the acting background, but I didn't know how to do an audiobook. We didn't know how we wanted this to, you know, come into the world, mm-hmm. and what it would look like. But I felt that desire, that same joy to just achieve this. And we love it. And we know we did an amazing job. And the fact that it's resonating with other people is icing on the cake, because we couldn't not do it. It was, So,
but you still had to learn a lot of skills to do that.
Well, I had to learn, you know, I think I'm one of those people that loves learning by doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were to, you know, you would tell me like, watch the videos on how to do it. And I was like, this is not going to go anywhere for me, because I'm not going to retain it unless I need it. If mm-hmm. I need to know how to do something, then I'm going to learn it. Mm-hmm. So I learned by doing it. And that process is so exciting to me, because I know that I'm also growing as a person if I can accomplish something really hard that I don't think I know how to do or mm-hmm. have never done before. So that challenge is also really gratifying for me.
And now there's the next challenge, which is taking it on the road.
Yeah, and we have no clue how to do that either.
Yeah, we'll figure it out, I guess. We'll just make it happen.
Yeah.
It's really just about putting your energy into something and then watching as things start falling into place.
Exactly. Yeah. Like you don't know what you don't know, but you'll find it out. And then that thing will lead to another thing. And we have very different styles, you and I. Mm-hmm. You, what my sense of what you do, and you tell me what you think mine is, but my sense of what your approach is you throw like 100% of your energy into thinking about it, and you're almost like tunnel vision. Like you have to be so hyper focused on it until you get it to where you want it to be, and nothing like distracts you.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think my style is? I'm just kidding. Is
I
that,
don't know.
Do I have that right?
About I'm not really sure. I guess so. I'm not really sure. I guess I work on it until I'm done.
Yeah, but it's like you have this hyper focus about it. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, I kind of feel guilty if I'm not like you, like just sitting at the computer and like studying it and like figuring it out right then. To me, I have to walk away. And I have to kind of let it settle. And then I have to really check in with my intuition in a way and go, okay, what's the next right move? Where do I need to spend my energy?
Mm-hmm.
Because just spinning my wheels trying to figure it out doesn't work for me. And I feel like you are good at that. You're good at like, okay, I'm going to figure this out. And you just keep working it and working it, like kneading the dough. And for me, I have to leave it and come back to it.
Yeah, all of it was every single part of it. None of it's easy. I don't know why people expect it to be easy. We all want it to be easy, but it never is. You know, the creating of it is never easy, and then the marketing of it, putting it out there, and getting people to—that's half the battle.
Yeah, and I think the main thing that we discovered, and I think you working with Twirly Girl really helped you with mm-hmm. this project, because you saw how being authentic,
mm-hmm.
you know, and really communicating with your audience in a very real way resonates. And there's no other way to do it, because how could you post every single day if it wasn't something that was organic for you?
Yeah.
It would be torture trying to become this person that you think other people want to see, or you got to position yourself like this other person over here, you know, but it really is about finding your unique voice, because that's all we have. You know, there's a million books out there. There's a million dresses. I created dresses, right? Mm-hmm. There's a million of them. We don't need another one, mm-hmm. right? But what we don't have is the dress that I can make. What we don't have is the book that you can write.
Mm-hmm.
And I think leaning into that perspective is really, really empowering and crucial to the creative process.
Yeah. We would speak a lot. We would go on walks and speak a lot about, in the beginning, I would add, we would talk about what the function of art is, what's the expectation, and what the market is. I remember talking about, you know, like, because David Sedaris is the one who inspired me to write this, because I love his writing and it's the same genre, personal essays. And I remember talking to you like, but we know what he writes, people love. We know there's a market for it. So shouldn't I be doing that?
Yeah, I mean, but that is a, he's kind of paved the way. And that was inspiring. I think inspiration is so healthy. And that's right. What you were inspired by. But the whole thing that you talk about is finding your voice.
Yeah.
And it took you a while to kind of find the rhythm. And people, when they read it, they're never going to confuse David Sedaris and Michael Jamin. They're never going to, because your background in TV gave you this whole different way of going into a story and entertaining an audience. And that's just in your blood. It's in your makeup. It's just who you are. And that the details of everything that you write, it reads like a film or cinematically, because you know there's no moment in there where it's not leading to something else.
You are listening to What the Hell is Michael Jamin Talking About? Today's episode is brought to you by my new book, A Paper Orchestra, A Collection of True Stories. John Mayer says it's fantastic. It's multi-timbral. It runs all levels of the pyramid at the same time. His knockout punches are stinging sincerity. And Kirkus Review says, those who appreciate the power of simple stories to tell us about human nature, or who are bewitched by a storyteller who has mastered his craft, will find a delightful collection of vignettes, a lovely anthology that strikes a perfect balance between humor and poignancy. So, you know, my podcast is not advertiser supported. I'm not running ads here. So if you'd like to support me or the podcast, come check out my book. Go get it in an ebook or a paperback. Or if you really want to treat yourself, check out the audiobook. Go to michaeljamin.com/book. And now back to our show.
I wish it was a genre that was easier to explain to people. Because when people say, what's your story? What is a book about? I have to try to explain. Well, it's personal essays, but it's not an essay. Essay sounds like homework. Yeah. It's not a memoir, because I'm not important like that. I'm not, it's my memoir.
Yeah.
They're stories, but they're true. But what is that like? It'd be just so much easier if I could say, well, it's YA fantasy or something. And people go, oh, okay, I know what young adult fantasy is, but it's not that. And so that's part of the uphill struggle that we have, is like explaining to people, like getting people to understand enough just to take a chance and read it.
But I think, you know, I think letting people catch up to what is what's important. What it is important, because you're assuming that you have to like spell it out for people. And I'll equate it again to Twirly Girl. You know, the dresses I made were so hard to explain, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, but it's not this, it's not this, it's more like fantasy, but it's, you can wear it every day. And I had about 5,000 different taglines because mm-hmm. I couldn't communicate it. And then finally you came up mm-hmm. with the most amazing explanation of what it was after probably about 8 years of doing it, which was what?
What was it? You could say it.
Well, it's we don't create dresses. We create your favorite childhood memory.
Happy childhood.
We're creating happy memories.
Happy childhood.
This dress isn't just a dress.
You got it wrong. We create happy childhood memories. That's
right.
What it was.
Happy childhood. Well, you know, I've had a year doing the audiobook, so yeah. Girls in the distance.
Yeah.
There. But
that was another thing, because I remember we saw a wonderful special by this guy named Derek Delgadio called In and of Itself. It's a wonderful, it was on Hulu. It was like a one-time special, basically, like an hour long or something.
Well, it started as a stage play.
It started as a stage play. But when people, when I tell people what, when I try to describe what it's about, it's almost impossible to describe. And that's part of the problem. It's hard. Like, it was such a uniquely wonderful experience, but it's impossible to tell people to describe it because it's its own thing.
Yeah. I mean, but you would say it's a one-man show and a very unique experience.
Yeah, but there's magic and it's participation and like it's, but it's not magic. It's something else.
Yeah, it's not a magic show.
So it's not a magic show. So it's really hard to putting something in a box makes it easier to sell because people can understand what the box is. But, and I feel like that's part of the struggle I have with a paper orchestra, which is, And no one, everyone who reads it, they love it. But, you know, they still don't understand kind of what it is until they actually read it.
But see, I think what you have on the cover is perfect. It's true stories about the smallest moments that you sometimes forget. You know, what if the smallest moments were the ones that meant the most? So that says everything to me. That's all I need to know.
That's what the book is. It's just about, hey, here's a small moment in life where I point out, which easily you could have forgotten about because it's so small. And it turns out if you look back at that moment, everything changed because of it.
I love that you talk about the fact that it's really not about, you have to have these catastrophic or monumental things happen to you to be a changed person. Most of us don't have those, you know, huge moments. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so tender and intimate about it and relatable. Mm-hmm. Because you aren't this, you didn't come from a, you know, unusual background. You're pretty average with, you know, child of divorce. That's kind of average for our generation.
So those are the kind of stories that I tell. I really don't think the stories are my stories. The details are mine, but I'm really trying to tell your story, but maybe you haven't figured out how to do that. But I do that because I'm a writer, so I know how to do that. So,
And I think we're just kind of, it's nice that we're able to work well together. Mm-hmm. In so many ways. And I think it really does stem from having that deep respect for each other's gifts. Mm-hmm. And we're able to really be very upfront with each other when we don't like something or when we question it. And I'm not married to my way, doing it my way. I'm really looking at the bigger picture. Like, I want a paper orchestra to be great. What's going to serve that? Yes. And I think we both have that in mind. And in terms of the tour and taking it on the road, I mean, I think you're more than ready to perform it. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited for people to be able to experience it in that way as well.
Yeah, it's a different kind of. That's why, because the show is a theatrical show, and I do think there's something more intimate about, like, people say, can't you record it and play it up? You know, yeah, I could, but
that's the audiobook, but that audiobook is going to be different.
Yeah, but in terms of even like recording a stage show, like you'll miss the intimacy of being right in front of me, being in the room and feeling the energy. You don't feel the energy. That's part of the thing with TV, like. It's great. It's a wonderful form, but you don't have the same energy as you do in seeing live theater. And I wish there's a better way, because many people don't want to see live theater, but it's like, it's different. Like, it's a different experience. You know, good theater is great. Bad theater is terrible. That's why it runs the whole gamut. It's like, you know, there's that expression, nothing lasts forever except for bad theater. And, you know, and that's because of the energy.
Yeah.
So it goes both ways.
Yeah, and it's when we were working together on the audiobook the first time, we were trying to convey that performance that we do live. And after listening to it again and showing our, you know, having our daughter Lola listened to it, and her listening to the literally the first 3 minutes, mm-hmm. and I had already edited the whole thing, she was like, "Oh no, this isn't. I can't. You got to bring it down."
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, "Yeah." I had a feeling, because when I was editing it, I was like, I don't know about this. We just got to see.
Yeah, we had to do it again because we wanted the performance to be more intimate, because you're listening to it on headphones or alone in the car. And it's a different, you're not listening it in a group of people, which is what the theater show is. So I'm literally in your head because you're wearing headphones. We had to bring everything down and make the performance much more intimate. It's a different, and we'll have to see how that affects my next performance, my live show.
They're totally different.
I know.
Totally. Yeah, it's a whole, but see, when you say like we had to bring it down, I don't like saying it like that because it makes it sound like it's sleepy.
No.
And it's not.
We had to bring it more intimate.
Yeah, but it's like, I really wanted, it's more like you contained the energy. Mm-hmm. Like we took this kind of energy that needs to project out,
mm-hmm.
and we harnessed it and like shoved it into a little like 12 by 12 area.
But this is all acting stuff that I could not have done without you, because you're an actor. I couldn't have figured this out on my own, I don't think.
No, I think it would have been really hard, because your tendency when you would just start to read it, you know, before I would kind of steer you in the right direction or go, mm-hmm. oh, you're going down the wrong path, let me take you over here. That's pretty much all I needed to do mm-hmm. in those moments. But your natural tendency was to just like, you know, just start reading it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, where are you? I don't hear your personality. I'm not engaged in the story mm-hmm. because you're not connected to it. Yeah. So it really required the same amount of energy, Michael, that it does for you to do this on stage.
Yeah.
But you had to have the same amount of energy, but contain it.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, it's a whole different art to it. Because I'm not an actor, so I had to learn how to perform it, to keep people engrossed in it, it's a fun performance. We want to travel because this is what we want to do next. We want to travel together and put it up and continue. So if anyone wants to come see it, you can go to michaeljammin.com/upcoming and enter your city. And then we'll let you know when we get to your city. We're figuring out how to, this is the next thing we're figuring out, how to actually make it happen so we can do this effectively, bring it to people's, you know, bring the theater. Yeah. Because it's a whole, again, you know, people will say to me, can you sell it as a TV? Maybe it could be a TV show, and maybe it could be a movie. And I'm always thinking about, why can't it just be a book? Why can't it be an audiobook? Why can't it be a theatrical show? Like, as if TV or movies is somehow better than the experience that we're creating now. I don't think it is. And I work in television and film. I don't think it's better. I think there's a betterness to what we have.
Yeah, there's a pureness to it. There's something very simple and pure, and the pacing of it. Like everything's so... everything is consumed so quickly right now, and it's almost too much. It's just too much. And what this does is it helps us to slow down.
Yeah. There's a power in the pause. There's a power. There's so much energy that you can portray. Like, this is something that took me a while to have confidence to do, but because you can act, you're talking, you're singing, you're doing whatever, the whole dog and pony show. But in leaving that pause and saying nothing, there's almost like there's this anticipation, and the audience is just waiting for it. And it's like a loaded gun.
Yeah, I don't like that analogy. But
what is it?
Well, it's like you're on the edge of your seat. And you've got us like in your hands, and we're just captive. We're a captive audience. Like time stands still. Time stands still, and we're just with you. And that it really is like allowing our being to kind of just be in that moment. It crystallizes the moments. And those are the moments in theater that why it's so impactful is because we're in this communal experience together where we're experiencing time at the same time, and we're also being together at the same time. It's very profound. And I remember working with you on the audiobook, and you were really hesitant to take us with you. Like, I remember that I kept saying, take us with you, Michael. It was like, but I'm going too slow, or I'm going too fast, or I'm, you know, it was like, it didn't matter the pacing. Like I would arbitrarily tell you, like, take us with you. And you would say, but I am. I go, yeah, but you're kind of, even if you're slow or even if you're fast, the intention is to connect with us and make sure that we're with you. And it's hard on an audiobook because there's no audience. But with an audience, you can feel
Yeah, but with the audience too, like I'm in front of a bright light. I don't see them. I can sense them, but I can't see anybody.
But that's what's important, is you sensing it. You can totally sense it.
Yeah.
You can sense it because you can hear the, or you can hear the laugh, or you can hear the the silence is different than a regular silence. It's like a pin drop.
There's that moment at the end of the Marissa disclaimer where I confess to something and the audience is so disappointed. I remember the first time we performed it, they were just like,
we all go,
everyone was so disappointed in me. But that's what's so effective about it, is that they were along for the ride. And that's another thing, as I, because you gave me a couple things that helped me before each show. You printed out Elie Kazan's, what is it called?
Like the Letter to the Actor.
And I read it before where he talks about what my responsibility is to the audience as a performer, what my responsibility is. And so it can come off as being self-absorbed acting. It could come off as being narcissistic. Look at me. But you can't look at it that way. You have to look at it as, this is what I have to do in order to give you what you want.
A gift. You have to give the audience a gift. And you have that responsibility to leave it all on the stage.
Yes.
And when you're an actor, it's no longer about you, Michael. It's about the words on the page.
Yeah.
And you need to fulfill those words on the page. And as an actor, we're taught that the words are sacred. We don't change the words. We don't try and outthink the words. We don't, you know, they are everything. And our job is to bring that to life and bring ourselves to the piece.
And it's exhausting, though. At the end of the show, it is exhausting. I don't people appreciate how much energy I have to be in every moment so as not to like check out or phone in, or like just like at the end of the night, I'm exhausted from an hour show. It's like, oh God.
And you know, you're not expected, like it's impossible in a way. And the greatest actors will say this too, that, you know, it is a job. So what do you do if you're not feeling it? And in that moment, you're thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. Or, oh my God, I can't wait to just go home and lie down, right? Because it requires so much energy. And what you do is you go with that truth inside. I don't even want to be here right now. You use the truth of what you're feeling in that moment, and that brings you back into the piece. You have to connect to something real. Whereas if you're denying it and you're going, oh my God, I suck right now, I need to force myself to have this energy, then you're going to overcompensate, and it's just going to, you're going to force it, and it's not going to be truthful. But if you really go into the moment of like, ah, damn, I got nothing. I feel nothing. How does that make you feel? Feels pretty shitty. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm just going to say the next line from this place because mm-hmm. this is where I'm at. And then it takes off. Mm-hmm. Then you're off again. So, I mean,
but what if the line you're not supposed to feel shitty on?
It doesn't, the audience buys it because the audience knows truth. As long as you're truthful, we're going to take however you read it and go, oh, that must be what that means. Oh, the character must feel this way. They're not going, oh, Michael's.
But the character is not supposed to feel, the character is excited to be at a party.
But it could look like this. Oh my God, I am so excited to be here. Mm-hmm. Like it could look really intense and mm-hmm. focused. When I'm feeling like, God damn it, I'm not feeling anything. Mm-hmm. Instead of the idea of like, oh my God, I'm so happy to be here. Like, right. Why does it have to come out that way?
Right.
Even if I came out and was like, I'm really excited to be here. What mm-hmm. does that come out? It could come right. across like I'm a little nervous or I'm like, I'm excited. Yeah. I'm afraid to show it.
But it feels truthful, you're saying.
Yes. It right. As long as it's rooted in some kind of truth,
right.
the audience will interpret it however it needs to go with the story.
This is some high-level directing shit for people. Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's I appreciate that. I think a lot of it to me is very... how I was trained was always going with what is, you know, and you hear a noise, somebody, it's not about like everybody being quiet all the time. And, you know,
all right, oh so what God. Happens if you hear a noise backstage during your show?
You incorporate it. Even if you don't want to draw attention to it, you as the actor, like, it, because the audience is all going to hear it. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you hear, you know, that, I have to just kind of go, all right, I don't have to comment on it. I just have to take that moment and allow it to be there. Because again, if you deny it.
But doesn't that break the fourth wall if you hear a banging backstage and then you turn your head and you acknowledge it as backstage?
Yeah, but it could be the character. If you're the character and you hear something backstage, that's the world you're in. It could be in the next room.
Yeah, you have to. But if you don't acknowledge it, it's like, well, why aren't they acknowledging?
Yeah. And then there's like a giant elephant in the room and, you know, and stuff like props falling over. Oh, my God. There'd be like, you know, the worst thing an actor could do. One of the worst things is like, you know, their hat falls off and it's not supposed to fall off. And the whole time it's sitting in the middle of the stage, the audience is worried about the hat. Now.
Right.
We're going to be thinking about the hat. So the worst thing an actor can do is to deny that the hat fell off.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like use it, use all of it. All of it is for the moment to fuel you. And sometimes the best, when I was on Friends, David Schwimmer and I were rehearsing our scene, the you did a bad thing, very bad, very, very bad. Yes, I know that scene. And we were rehearsing it and we screwed up, but we didn't sit there and go, oh, wait a minute. We screwed up the line. Let's take it back. No, you just go with it. Mm-hmm. And they and Marta and David, the show creators, were standing right off to the side. And they're like, wait a minute, guys, what happened there? It was like, yeah, we screwed up the lines. Well, that's going in. We're mm-hmm. going to do it that way now.
Yeah.
And so the best, the happy accidents are when you don't plan it.
Yeah.
And you're going with it. And Michael, you have some amazing moments in the audiobook where you can't speak. Mm-hmm. You're so full of emotion that you can't speak. And I've listened to it a number of times in my car and my heart goes into my throat because I can't see you. And a lot of times I don't remember. It always catches me by surprise that moment is mm-hmm. happening. And I think, oh my God, did the audio track like drop out? Mm-hmm. And then because there's such a stillness and then all of a sudden you come back in and your next line is just you can barely even talk. And that resonates through the friggin' speaker. We're not even seeing you. That's how powerful our emotion is if we just allow it to take us and to trust it. And it's transformative.
It really is like a time machine for me, because when I'm retelling those stories, it's like I'm living it again. And the funny thing is, people after that show, when I do this, some of those stories, people are worried about me, you know? Yeah.
Because it is, that's what Ilia Kazan talks about, is like, you just leave it all on the stage.
Yeah.
Because why else are you there? Why are you there? If you're not going to go there, then why are you there?
That's why I feel like one of the things that I like about personal essays, which is so hard to explain to people, but when they read it, they get it, is in a novel, the characters are made up, they're fictitious. And the worst thing that can happen, your character, they'll die. But again, they're just made up. So it's everything's fine. You know, your favorite made up character just had something horrible. Again, they're just made up. But with these personal essays, like this, I feel the stakes are higher. I feel like it's a unique art form, because the stakes, it's a real person telling real stories about themselves. The stakes are higher because they're not made up.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of what, you know, you performing your own work too, is that you can really shine in that way. You don't have to worry about becoming a character, putting something on. But I think it is hard for you, because you have to psych yourself up to really go there.
Yeah.
It's like your energy has to be up. You have to be willing to investigate that. And if you're not feeling it, you got to go with the truth that you're not feeling it, and then see where that leads you. It's scary.
It's also like, the funny thing is, I don't really have any desire to do anybody else's, to act in someone else's show. I don't have a desire to become an actor. It's just really more like I have a desire to pursue this art.
And why do you feel the pinch to want to perform it? You know, and I've asked you this in the end of the audiobook too, but it's not so much, what is it in you that needs to be seen and heard? Or
I'm not entirely clear on it. I just want to, I suppose it's because, and I'm very happy, I've had a long and successful career as a TV writer, but part of me also feels like there's just something missing from what I write.
Interesting. Yeah. I think maybe it's similar to when I was a dancer, I was like, I need more expression than this. Mm-hmm. Like I have to act now, because dancing just is part of the expression.
Yeah.
But it's not allowing me to fully express everything.
Yeah. So
maybe performing is part of that for you. Like it's not enough to just have people read it or listen to it. You want to experience it with them. You need that connection, that expression.
Yeah, I guess. And I also want to, I kind of want to just do something special. Like, that's all. I just like, because I wonder sometimes before when I go on, I go, why am I doing this? I just want to create something special that people will like. And I think people get it from the book and the audio book. So it's not necessary. I don't think it's necessary for me to perform, but maybe it's a plus. I don't know.
Yeah, I think more will be revealed, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll see why. And that's another thing about following those creative impulses. I know, because I have this hindsight with Twirly Girl after doing it for 15 years, I can honestly look back and say that I would have never expected to have experienced what I experienced in the way that all the gifts that it brought me, there's no way I could have predicted that. And I think it's the same thing here. You just don't know where it's going to lead you, but you feel the need to do it. And I think that's enough. I think that's all you need, honestly. It takes on a life of its own, too.
Yeah, we'll see where it goes, but we'll just put energy into it and see where it goes.
Yes. On to the next project, but this project now.
Well, maybe is that where we conclude this podcast? Is there anything else to cover?
I don't know. Anything else for you?
I don't know. I'm very grateful for all your help doing this. I couldn't do any of this without you. For everyone listening, it really helps if you have someone helping you with whatever your project is. It does help a lot. And so you have to find the right person, whoever that is.
Well, I'm so grateful for you and everything that you've brought me. And this is just a joy, and everything I want it to be, it is. And I'm so happy to be working with you.
Yeah, you're sweet. All right, everyone. There you go. A Paper Orchestra. Signed copies are available at michaeljammin.com. You can also find the link to the paperback, the ebook, the audiobook. The audiobook's on Audible, Spotify, and Apple. It's called The Paper Orchestra, produced and directed by Cynthia Jammin.
Yeah. But here's the thing, guys. If you want to see him in person, we would love to meet you. So keep in touch with us.
Yeah. Sign up at michaeljammin.com/upcoming. Okay, everyone. Thank you again. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you, Michael. I love you.
I love you.
1 Another fantastic episode of What the Hell is Michael Jammin Talking About? How do I do it week after week? Well, I don't do it with advertiser-supported money. I tell you how I do it. I do it with my book. If you'd like to support the show, if you'd like to support me, go check out my new book, A Paper Orchestra. It asks the question, what if it's the smallest, almost forgotten moments that are the ones that shape us most? Laura Sanjogoma says, good storytelling also leads us to ourselves, our memories, our beliefs, personal and powerful. I loved the journey. And Max Muchnick, who was on my show, says, as the father of daughters, I found Michael's understanding of parenting and the human condition to be spot on. This book is a fantastic read. Go check it out for yourself. Go to michaeljammin.com/book. Thank you all, and stay tuned. More great stuff coming next week.